Okay, we have a live event taking place in Lebanon and Beirut. Hezbollah Secretary General Seyed Hassan Nasrallah speaking. Let's take a listen.
We must stop and look at it, evaluate it, and then I will end in the Yemeni issue by taking a stance which I will call for. Regarding the first topic, the Saudi allegation of achieving all of their goals, this is the biggest misleading which has been practiced ever since the announcement of the end of Operation Decisive Storm, meaning the official spokesman, the Saudi media, Saudi officials, the Arab media, political factions, writers, journalists. They do what you want. They all spoke and they congratulated because of the great victory achieved by Saudi Arabia over the course of 26 days against Yemen under the title of Operation Decisive Storm, which achieved all of its goals. And this was once again repeated in the Gulf Cooperation Summit, stressing on the fact that the storm achieved all of its goals. Unfortunately, today in the Arab world and the Islamic world and in the whole world, because the media of the other side, we confess that the media of our side, or the media of the side which is being subject to an assault in this war, doesn't have the strength or capabilities of having such a media of the opposing side waging Operation Decisive Storm. Would anyone accept this misleading, such tricks? Me, as an Arab citizen, because the war is being waged in the name of the Arabs and Arabism, tell me, where are the goals which have been achieved? Tell me, where are all of these goals that have been achieved? Not just after 26 days since the beginning, up until today. Today is day number 40 since the aggression began. Not all of the goals. Give me one goal which has been achieved ever since the beginning of the aggression until the announcement of the end of Operation Decisive Storm until today, after 40 days have passed. Has Saudi Arabia or the Saudi regime and its allies, have they restored the alleged legitimacy to Yemen? Has it restored Abd Rabbu Mansour Riadi to Yemen, to Aden or Sana'a? Has it been able to prevent the expansion of the Yemeni army and the popular committees, preventing them reaching the areas they want to reach? Has Saudi Arabia confiscated the weapons of Ansarullah, because this was mentioned amongst the goals of Operation Decisive Storm? Has the Saudi regime, has it been capable of achieving any of the goals which it mentioned, the other goals? Friday, a while ago, we spoke and others spoke, we listed the goals which they mentioned, but nothing has been achieved at all. Have they been able, in the real goal, have they been able to restore their hegemony over Yemen? No, they haven't. Have they eliminated the alleged Iranian hegemony, the assumed, imagined Iranian hegemony? Very simply, let's end this, and I say, give me one goal, not all the goals, give me one goal of Operation Decisive Storm which has been achieved up until now. Not since the beginning of operation, so-called Operation Restoring Hope. So we are witnessing a great Saudi failure, a clear and great Saudi failure, and a clear Yemeni victory. And this Saudi failure, the reason behind it, first and foremost, after God's help, the reason is the steadfastness of the Yemenis, the perseverance of the Yemenis, their firmness, their courage, their cohesion, and also the popular support of the army and the popular committees. This is the reason which prevented any of the goals of Operation Decisive Storm from being achieved. There might be other reasons. However, these reasons remain secondary, which assist. So we are witnessing a Saudi failure and defeat, a clear Saudi failure and defeat, and a clear Yemeni victory. Here I'm speaking about a round, not about the whole war, a round in the war. The second main issue was the second operation was restoring hope, restoration of hope. And here we have another trick which is being played. In order to cover up the failure which took place in the first round, and in order also to cover up the incapability in the first round, meaning that this regime and those who are with it, they realize that they are incapable of achieving those goals. So they set high goals, goals which require a long war and also require maybe a large land operation. They don't have the courage to go ahead with such a large-scale ground operation, and they are still looking for armies which they could hire. And we heard today or yesterday that some of the Senegalese troops might fight in Saudi Arabia. Anyway, they have now gone from goals under operation in this operation Restoring Hope. They are speaking about goals, or they are setting goals which might be achievable. Here is a trick. They change the name from Decisive Storm to Restoring Hope, and they considered that the goals of Operation Decisive Storm have all been achieved, and therefore they set very moderate goals for Operation Restoration of Hope in order for them not to be depicted or accused of failure, because they could say allegedly they achieved these goals. So if we take a look at these goals, what do they say in the declaration which announced the beginning of Operation Restoration Hope and the end of Decisive Storm? They said that efforts will be made to achieve the following goals. This is what is said, and I quote, number one, a quick resumption of the political process in accordance with the UN Security Council resolution and the GCC proposal. Second, continuing to protect civilians. Number three, continuing to fight terrorism. Number four, continuing in facilitating the foreigners from leave the country and providing medical assistance to the Yemeni people in the areas that have suffered, and giving room for international efforts to provide humanitarian assistance. Number five, countering the military operations of the Houthi militias and those who are allied with them, and preventing these militias from using the weapons which come from the outside or in the military camps. Number six, international cooperation to prevent arms from the air, land and sea from reaching militia, etc., etc., etc. These are the goals listed in Operation Restoration of Hope. Of course, they're not honest in declaring these goals. I'm going to go back to this. Their main goal, their real goal, is the first goal, to seize control of Yemen, force Yemen to kneel and bow down, and to return Yemen to American and Saudi hegemony. And today is becoming clearer that if they are incapable of achieving the goal of restoring hegemony and forcing Yemen to bow down, they will destroy Yemen over the heads of its inhabitants and its people. That's what is happening indeed now. Anyway, if we go back to these declared goals for Operation Restoration of Hope, yes, they can allege that these goals are achievable. Let's go ahead and launch a political dialogue. They allege that they are protecting these civilians, then they bomb. What's the aim of the bombing? To protect civilians, fighting terrorism, and also the siege from the sea and from the air. This existed before, and also countering the movement. So practically speaking, they came down from the top of the tree to just above the lower end of the tree. They allege that the other goals have been achieved, but they didn't. And they set goals which they can say they are making achievements towards achieving. This is also a trick. The third trick is in the goals of Operation Restoration of Hope. They allege that they are serving these goals. So we ask, are they indeed serving these goals? For example, protecting civilians. Ever since the beginning of Operation Restoration of Hope up until today, the air raids and the bombing in all of its forms is targeting houses and civil suburbs and civilian targets, as was the case since the beginning of the war. Protecting civilians means killing more civilians, and I would even add using weapons which are forbidden to be used internationally. After what was uncovered by some international organizations regarding the use of the cluster bombs, and it is the most dangerous weapon which could be used against civilians. And we in Lebanon, we experienced this, and we are still suffering after the July 2006 war. So fighting terrorism, when it comes to fighting terrorism, this is one of the goals they set for Operation Restoration of Hope. What's the result here? The result is giving ammunition and weapons to Al-Qaeda, being allied with Al-Qaeda and Hadi's militias, Al-Qaeda expanding and seizing control of areas which it didn't exist, in which it didn't exist before, and also bombing the Yemeni army and the popular committees to prevent them from reaching the areas where Al-Qaeda is present. So what they're doing is the contrary to what they say. For example, further expanding humanitarian and emergency aid. What has happened until now? Any humanitarian emergency aid has been prevented from reaching Yemen from anywhere in the world completely. What is even worse, they resorted to striking airports, especially the Sana'a airport, and bombing the airport in the well-known incident when an Iranian civil airplane entered Yemeni airspace and wanted to land in Sana'a. It was carrying humanitarian emergency assistance. They bombed the airport in order that this airplane not be able to land. This is what they call facilitating emergency aid. The political process, what they have done is to complicate the political process and to make the political dialogue even more unlikely, because instead of waiting for the UN envoy to come and call on all parties to hold dialogue on in a neutral country, a country which hasn't participated in the aggression on Yemen, and this is a condition declared and was committed also. The Yemeni Islamic and nationalist factions announced this condition, and it said it's committed to this condition. However, Saudi Arabia called on Abu Dhabi Mansour Hadi to call for a political dialogue conference to be held in upcoming days in Riyadh. What does this mean? It means they don't want this dialogue to be held. They don't want this table of dialogue to be formed. They don't want this political process to be launched. This is called complicating, obstructing dialogue, not pushing towards dialogue. The fourth trick is to try and portray to the world and the international community that Saudi Arabia has stopped the war on Yemen, has stopped Operation Decisive Storm, and what it is doing is an operation which has limited objectives. And this is not only a trick, but is also a lie, and it's fabrication. The war after the change of name to Restoration of Hope, it's the same. After 40 days, nothing has changed. The violence has increased, the harshness, the ugliness, the criminality has increased, and nothing has changed except the name and the alleged objectives. Now, today it is becoming clear, today more than any time before, it is becoming clear the goal of this aggression. And it is also becoming clear that the Yemeni people and the Yemeni army and the Yemeni nationalist factions reject bowing down and kneeling and going back to the era of hegemony, and they insist on their sovereignty and freedom and independence of their country and confronting the aggression. This is clear after 40 days. As we said around 10 days ago, or about 2 weeks ago, there doesn't seem to be any signs of breaking down, and this still exists today. Even further, these Yemeni factions, the army, the popular committees and the tribes, etc., they are now taking some kind of initiative in border areas, and the situation regarding the situation on the ground, they are still advancing. Even according to the media outlets affiliated with Operation Decisive Storm, because what does it mean when the Saudi Air Force, the Saudi warplanes, launch 120 or 150 air raids within a matter of hours on certain areas? Everyone who is familiar with military issues knows what this means. So therefore, there is a clear, decisive Yemeni will of not bowing down and surrendering and not retreating. This is regarding the Yemenis. That's their will, that's their decision. But there is also another factor. It is the responsibility of the world and the responsibility of the countries and the peoples, including the peoples of our region as well, in confronting what this aggression is doing at the humanitarian level, meaning this naval air, this siege from the air, land and sea, preventing food from entering, preventing medicine from entering, medical supplies, fuel, not only preventing them from reaching the Yemenis, but also preventing this food and these medical supplies, preventing them from entering into Yemen and bombing all the areas which they assume, or where they assume there is wheat or food or fuel. This naval air, this siege from the air, land and sea, preventing food from entering, preventing medicine from entering, medical supplies, fuel, not only preventing them from reaching the Yemenis, but also preventing this food and these medical supplies, preventing them from entering into Yemen and bombing all the areas which they assume, or where they assume there is wheat or food or fuel. This is what is taking place right now. Today, the international organizations are talking about a very dangerous humanitarian situation, a catastrophic situation. Of course, this has not touched the determination of the Yemenis. I'm speaking about this issue because I want to call on the world to take its responsibility. But I say to the aggressors that this policy or this strategy, call it what you want, putting pressure on the resistance fighters or the fighters or those who have a free will, putting pressure on them by resorting to killing their families and bombing their women and children, destroying their homes, this is a failed policy which will lead nowhere. It hasn't led anywhere before. We have Vietnam. Forget Vietnam. Look at Gaza. Look at Lebanon. In all of Israel's wars, the civilians and the people were targeted. Gaza was besieged. It is still besieged. In the 33-day war, also Lebanon was besieged and everything was struck and targeted. But did this weaken the resistance? Did it impose on the resistance to retreat? No, on the contrary, it pushed the resistance more and more to stand firm and bring about victory. And I say to those aggressors that everything you are doing at the humanitarian level will not change anything in the conflict. On the contrary, it will increase the ugliness of your faces and will increase the conviction of the Yemeni people regarding your hostility and your arrogance. And it will also unite the people behind those who are fighting in defense of their sovereignty and independence and unity and dignity. And so I don't want to speak from this angle. I want to speak from the angle of the world assuming its responsibility in this regard. The countries of the world, especially the Islamic and Arab countries, must exert efforts to lift this siege and send the medicine and all necessities to the Yemeni people via the Security Council, international organizations, by also infiltrating and breaking the siege in any way whatsoever. And this is the responsibility of the people, and I call on all the peoples to take their responsibility in this regard. And I stress once again, despite this very grave humanitarian situation, what we're seeing in Yemen is more heroics, more enthusiasm and firmness, even at the civilian level. And this policy and this strategy will not lead to the defeat of any people as long as the people have a will and leadership and determination and martyrs. This is regarding Yemen. I wanted to speak about Yemen from this perspective. Second, regarding Iraq, after ISIL took control of Mosul and a number of Iraqi provinces months ago, and after it threatened the remaining provinces and also the countries of the region, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, etc., it was announced that a coalition was formed under the leadership of the United States of America to confront ISIL. If you remember, on the screen as well. It wasn't a sermon, it was a screen speech like today. We said back then that America isn't serious in the war against ISIL or in confronting ISIL, and that the matter will take time, and America is in no hurry, and America will work on taking advantage of the danger of ISIL and the threat of ISIL and the behavior of ISIL. It will take advantage of all of this in order to implement its project in the region. And we said back then that America's project in Iraq and in the region is to divide these countries. And you can go back. All this is well known, dividing these countries on sectarian grounds and ethnic grounds. Like Iraq, we divide it between Arabs and Kurds, and we divide the Arabs between Sunnis and Shia. And the same goes for Syria. We divide it on sectarian or ethnic grounds. When we go to Yemen, on sectarian grounds, or maybe other kinds of grounds, Libya, other places. We said that the real goal of America is to divide the countries of a region once again on sectarian and ethnic grounds. Imagine in front of us, we have countries that are all weak and are divided in a certain way, and there are people who can incite these countries against each other, countries in conflict with each other. Then we are heading towards the region, we are heading in the region towards civil wars that could continue for hundreds of years. This is what America wants from our governments and from our countries. This is what we said at the beginning of these developments. Today, the Americans are revealing their intentions. They have reached the stage where they want to implement the first step towards legitimizing or transforming, legitimizing the dividing of Iraq and making the division of Iraq official is what the American Congress is currently working on, issuing a bill which allows the American government to arm certain Iraqi components or parties, irrespective or separate of the Iraqi central government. They are behaving as if the Iraqi government is for the Shia. We have a Sunni component which we must deal with as Americans directly, and we have a Kurdish component which we must deal with directly. So there is no longer one country and no longer a central government. This is, according to what everyone understood, this is the beginning. Now, this justification which they are resorting to today, is it reasonable, logical? No. From the beginning of the events in Mosul and ISIL, we all remember that the highest religious cleric in the holy city of Najaf, when the religious cleric called for jihadist defense and confronting ISIL, didn't call for defending certain areas and not the others, or certain provinces and not the others, or certain sects and not the others. It called for defending all of the Iraq, all of the Iraqi people, all of Iraq's territory, and Iraq's sovereignty without any differentiation. The Iraqi government as well, it also behaved in such a manner. The Iraqi armed forces, the popular committees, their fighting is not based on sectarian or ethnic lines or provincial lines. And what proves this is Salah ad-Din province, which is described as a Sunni province, unfortunately. Over there, many martyrs from the Iraqi army, the popular committees, the security services have fallen. So therefore, Iraq and the Iraqis are not behaving on the assumption that this is our province and your province and each one should tackle his own area. No, this is not the case. The religious clerics, the government, the parliament, the main political factions are not behaving in such a manner. And what is even worse, sir, there is no excuse for the Americans to go and say they want to give weapons to a certain Iraqi component directly. What is even worse is that the Americans are not living up to their commitments, even when it comes to selling weapons and ammunition that are required. So it is clear that there is an American attempt to make the Iraqi government and the Iraqi forces incapable of confronting the danger of ISIL in Anbar and Mosul, and taking advantage of this to open direct ties and find an excuse to directly arm Iraqi components which will in the end lead to dividing the country. This is very dangerous. Early on, the religious clerics in the holy city of Najaf also declared its clear stance regarding this dangerous American step and rejected all of these measures. And the Iraqi religious clerics called on all sides to take the appropriate stance. The same goes for the Iraqi government, the Iraqi parliament, religious clerics, and also political factions. Many Iraqi political parties and many of their demands were very high as well. So, is it that dangerous? Yes, it is. And today, some people might say, you're talking about Iraq, but what's our responsibility? In this regard, our responsibility is also to reject this step, because this is not just about Iraq. It doesn't begin and end only in Iraq. You, the people of our region, you, the governments of our region, you, the current generations who are watching these challenges, you must realize that this step lays the foundations for a very dangerous phase. What is being prepared for by this step, if it goes ahead, it means we're heading towards the dividing of Iraq. Then will come the dividing of Syria, the dividing of Yemen and other countries. And here I must warn, even the countries that are collaborating with the US on dividing Iraq or Syria or Yemen, their turn will come for being divided, certainly. First and foremost, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So, our generation must not be silent to this matter. Look, previously, and it is also today, the same logic is used when the Jewish gangs began to seize control of Palestine. This is an Iraqi issue, you're Lebanese, or this is a Yemeni issue, you're an Iraqi. What do you have to do with it? Or this is a Syrian issue, you're Egyptian, what do you have to do with it? This is a big mistake. This region, its fate is one, its history is one, its future is one, its present is one, its challenges and the dangers it faces are one. Our generation must not commit the same mistakes that were committed by the earlier generation or generations that surrendered and backed down and weakened and turned Palestine over to Israel. Those who are suffering from Israel today are not the generation that surrendered, but generation after generation after generation. And we here today, we are still suffering. Our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren will continue to suffer if we don't assume responsibility. The same goes regarding this very dangerous division project, which wants to drag the region into ethnic and sectarian wars for hundreds of years. What will the fate of the people of the region be? Their dignity, their livelihood, because they always say you speak about dignity and honor. You never speak about food, drink, livelihood. Will anything remain for the people of the region when there are wars today? How many displaced people are there? How many refugees are there? How many hungry people are there? How many economies are being destroyed? How many life opportunities are being lost? A very important, the essential condition for a good economy and for a good life is security and stability, real security and real stability. This is what they want to take from this region by dividing it into countries in conflict with one another, so that America will remain the judge and Israel remain the dominator. The one that dominates. So what I call on is not to take this step lightly. It must be confronted at all levels, and also it must be prevented. This sedition must be defeated at its early stages. If we block the road to it now, we can block the road to other steps. Number three, regarding Syria. Now, regarding Syria, I will speak frankly. I speak quite frankly in regarding some matters. Lately, especially after Jisr al-Shughur in the Idlib province fell to the armed groups, we witnessed, and the Syrians and the Lebanese and the region in general witnessed, a wave of allegations, a lot of media talk on satellite TV stations, different media outlets, articles, news. and also on the social media. All of it, of course, is a blind psychological war. And if you know, this region for many years in the black corridors have been waging psychological war for years, and this psychological war is always renewed to take advantage of any opportunity or any gap or any incident they could use in order to launch waves of psychological warfare on the people. Now, some of these allegations focused also on sectarian angles. What was the main objective? What did they want to reach with what they said on the media? Their objective was the following. After Yusr Shughur, now let's be realistic, if I want to speak frankly, and before that, Idlib city fell to the militant groups, they said it means the government has ended. It's its last weeks and days. This is what they worked on. I'm summarizing it, just a comment. They said that the Syrian army lost its capability to confront and it's collapsing. Some of them also said in the process of this war, they said that the allies of Syria abandoned it. Iran sold it out in the nuclear issue. Russia sold it out. Syria's allies are abandoning it. The situation in Syria also, in their allegations and in their lies, they said that the situation in Syria is difficult. People are thinking, where can they flee? Where can they go? So a very, very strange picture was drawn. One of the lies, they said that the Syrian coastal areas is on the verge of falling. And here is a sectarian angle. They said that a great number of Alawites are coming from the coastal areas of Syria towards Lebanon, and the Lebanese government is preventing them from entering, and Hezbollah is putting pressure on the Lebanese government to allow them to enter into Lebanon. So a lie. Lies are free of charge. Or, for example, some of the allegations that said the Saudi government requested from the Alawites in Damascus or certain areas in Damascus, they told them to leave Damascus. But this is completely untrue. So what we were witnessing and what we are witnessing now is a psychological war which aims to nail the will and determination and steadfastness of the Syrians, and also aims to achieve by lies and allegations and by psychological war what they were not able to achieve during a world war on Syria, which was ongoing for 4 years. Sometimes such allegations do not lead anywhere. For example, in Mosul and Salah ad-Din, a lot of the war was a war of allegations and a psychological war. First of all, let's comment on this. No one should listen to these lies and these allegations and this psychological war. This is the general line. We must all realize, especially as Syrians and Lebanese, that what is being said is actually a psychological war. And it is not new. For 4 years, we have been listening and hearing that the Syrian government is ending, people want to flee, the army is ending. But when we used to listen to this talk 4 years ago, the situation was more difficult than it is today. The situation in Syria, the battles in Syria, Damascus, Aleppo, Homs, inside the cities, in many areas, the regional situation, the international situation today, things are a lot different. Changes, international, regional developments inside Syria have also taken place over these past few years, which make us very far away from these assumptions. For example, one thing which was said, what was said about the Iranian stance is not true. And just days ago, when Imam Khomeini, may God preserve him, when he made a speech, he spoke about this issue. He said, we are negotiating only about the nuclear issue, nothing else. And even when we are negotiating about the nuclear issue, we are very keen and focused on the interests of our allies, and nothing will come on behalf or on the account of our allies. This is something clear which denies the fact that Iran has abandoned Syria. The same goes for Russia. I don't know about Russia like I know about Iran, but there is nothing which shows, there is no sign, even no small sign, which says that the Russian leadership, for example, is in the process or is beginning to abandon the situation in Syria. Yes, what takes place sometimes on the battlefield, we must look for the reasons on the ground. For example, Idlib fell. Let's take a look. Why did Idlib fall? The situation of the militants, the army, the forces. Is there a problem in the leadership, the logistics, just as Shughur fell? Why? So let's look for the reasons on the ground. Not quickly take it to the international angle, the regional and the allies, the internal situation, the government and the army. How is it that this government is collapsing and this army is collapsing at a time where they are fighting on many different fronts and showing steadfastness on many different fronts and making achievements every day? How can this be? The correct way is that when any problem comes about, we must search for the reasons behind it and work on addressing this problem and preventing it from being repeated in any war, brothers and sisters, in the Golan Heights, in any round of war. If you win one round, it doesn't mean you win the whole war. And as long as the Syrian army and the defense forces, the popular defense committees, they have won many rounds for 4 years until today, but they have never alleged that they won the war as a whole. And one may lose a round. It doesn't mean he has lost the war. So the Syrian army and those who are with it over the past years have won very important rounds. And so now the most that they can say is that in a certain round, in a certain place, this side lost and that side won. But to say that because of this round they reach very quick results and take advantage of it in psychological war, those people who have always launched psychological war, they've always disappointed their supporters and disappointed themselves. When the situation on the ground changed in other rounds, and it is changing also in many rounds, and it will change, God willing. So this is the whole issue, and nobody should be affected by this. Of course, in Lebanon we have people who are always in a hurry, and they very quickly congratulate one another. Then they discover this is a lie. There is no wedding and bride and groom. Anyway, we must be vigilant towards this issue, and we must be aware of all of these angles. Regarding Hezbollah, I would also like to say on this night to our people, their beloved people in Syria, we are with you. We will remain standing by your side, whatever be the developments, and wherever we must be, we have been, and we will be. And in the recent stages, we have went to areas which we had not been to before over the past years. We believe this war is not the war of the Syrian people. We said this since we entered into this war. We didn't come into this war out of sympathy or on sectarian lines or party lines. We entered based on a certain approach which hasn't changed. On the contrary, it is being further proven to be correct. We entered based on a conviction that we are defending Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, and the whole region. So let's put hatred aside and let's realize very clearly. Let's look with a vision. God forbid, if these armed groups for 4 years until today, if they were able to take control of Syria, what would have been the fate of Syria and its people, and the fate of Lebanon and its people, and also what would have been the fate of the region? You can look around you to know the answer of this question. From our perspective, this is our conviction, this is our responsibility, and we stress to you tonight, we will continue assuming this responsibility, whatever be the sacrifices. Now, regarding Lebanon, I am going quickly in order to end before 1 hour has passed. Regarding Lebanon, of course, there are many important issues. The latest Israeli threats and the recent Israeli behavior requires us to stop and also take a look at the situation inside the country, the parliament, the legislations, the government, the appointments, the horizon of the local situation, the security plan in southern Beirut, the assassinations of our brothers in the Ain al-Hilwi refugee camp, many issues which require time. I will speak about them in the upcoming days because we have occasions and days, the Liberation Day 2000, and this occasion will give me the opportunity to speak more about the Lebanese situation. So therefore, with the available time, because it requires indeed a certain amount of time, I will use it to address the eastern Lebanese area and Qalamun because it's a sensitive matter which is keeping the Lebanese occupied. First of all, regarding Qalamun and the eastern mountain range, first of all, when I spoke before about the snow melting, I said that we are going to have to confront a certain issue, the army, the state, the resistance, people, the inhabitants of the country. After the snow melts, we will have to deal with a problem. So let's begin from here. What while we are in the process of doing the Eastern Mountain Range and Qalamun has nothing to do with anything else, meaning we spoke about this before Idlib or just Shughur. Some people in Lebanon say because they need a certain moral achievement, the Syrian leadership called on Hezbollah to open a new front in Qalamun. This is empty talk because I spoke about this issue before all of these developments on the ground in Syria. So there's no connection between the two. Although as a result, of course, any victory in any of the fronts will have positive impacts on all the other fronts. Number two, when I spoke about the snow melting, because we were aware of the intentions of the armed groups, we were aware that they were preparing, after the snow melts, they were preparing for launching attacks and also taking advantage of the spring and summer to change the equation in that area. And what proves this is that ever since the snow melted, we never attacked. They are the ones attacking. They're attacking the positions. They are launching assaults. They killed people in Arsal. They kidnapped people from Arsal. This all took place after the snow melted. And until today, we are not the ones who have been attacking. They are the ones attacking. So their intentions were clear to us. From when the snow was there until after it melted. Number three, regarding the Eastern Mountain Range and Qalamun, we are not speaking about an assumed threat. Come, let's confront an assumed threat. We're speaking about a real aggression, which exists every hour, every day, and every night. This aggression expresses itself in the following ways. Number one, attacking the positions. Number two, occupying very large Lebanese territories. Before we went to Qusair, even before we participated in the fight in Qusair, there were certain Lebanese territories, quite large territories in Arsal, which were under the control of the armed groups. They were using it logistically. Number three, attacking the Lebanese army, continuous attacks against the Lebanese army. Number four, attacking Lebanese people, killing and kidnapping and slaughtering. And what we saw recently in Arsal is a clear example. Number five, continuing to hold the Lebanese soldiers hostage and threatening to kill them, threatening their families and playing with their nerves. This is what we're seeing every day. Number six, bombing the area before and always threatening to bomb this area. So for this reason, this requires a permanent solution. We are not witnessing an assumed threat in order for anyone to discuss or say that does this threat exist or not? Will it come to life or not? We are talking about a real aggression. So number four, the state is incapable of addressing this issue. And if it was, it would have done so. And if it was and it didn't do so, this means it is not doing what it should. It must be asked. There are Lebanese soldiers held hostage, Lebanese people kidnapped, villages are being attacked, an army which is part of the state is being attacked, Lebanese territory occupied, and you're not doing anything. Go ahead, do something. So if the state, and this is not, I'm not saying this for the sake of the past, also for the future, if the state takes its responsibilities, we will all be with it and stand behind it. And if it wants us to stand in front of it, we're also ready. But in order not to wait, it is clear that the state, the Lebanese state, is incapable of doing this. Number five, in light of this situation and the necessity of addressing this issue, we will go ahead and address it. However, we haven't announced anything officially up until now. From our side, now there is analysis, there is talk, there are social media sites, assumptions. Yes, this exists. This is Lebanon. However, there was no official stance from Hezbollah regarding this issue. I will go to it in a few moments. No statement, no stance. None of us stood and said, we will do this, begin here, and go ahead with these steps. Yes, there are certain signs, preparations, people are witnessing them and are building on them. It's close, days, weeks. Yes, this atmosphere does exist. However, from our side, we haven't said anything. Going ahead and addressing this problem, that is something which is decisive. That's clear, because not doing this means abandoning responsibility. However, when the time, nobody said anything. The place, where exactly, from where to where, the limits of this assumed operation, the ceiling of this operation in place and in time, its stages, where does it want to reach, its goals on the ground. We didn't say anything in this regard, and let nobody oblige us or force us to say anything. Regarding Hezbollah, no official words have been said for anyone to demand from us or for anyone to hold us accountable for. And I say, in order to relieve you, if someone writes a statement and said this is for Hezbollah, we did not issue and we will not issue a statement. When this operation begins, it will speak for itself. It will impose itself on their media outlets, and then everyone will know that this battle has, or this operation has begun. But regarding its goals, its limits, its location, where does it want to reach, how long it lasts, we leave this to time. We won't speak about it now, and it's not in our interest at all to speak about this issue. Naturally, we will hear, and we have started to hear, and we will hear also in the future, we will hear a lot of talk, a lot of threats, a condemnation. This is normal. This is part of the Lebanese division. This exists. However, just the same as the issue of resistance, the resistance wasn't able to wait for consensus in support of it in Lebanon. If the resistance has waited for consensus to support it, there wouldn't have been resistance, and Israel would have stayed in Lebanon and they would have built settlements in Lebanon and done what it wanted. The same goes when it comes to confronting this threat. If we wanted to wait for consensus, these armed groups would have been in many areas in Lebanon without naming specific areas. So therefore, God willing, we will go ahead and deal with this matter, and we will take this responsibility and these sacrifices. Some say, for example, that who told you to come and do this? If someone doesn't want to confront the danger and thwart the danger facing the people and the country, that's his business. But this is a humanitarian, national, religious duty, and he who abandons this duty, if he can indeed take up this duty, then he takes all of this responsibility. Yes, there are some who stand with us and who are carrying out this duty at the political level, supporting us on the media, or giving us popular support, and this is something we thank.
We are thankful. You listen to Hezbollah Secretary General Seyed Hassan Nasrallah talking live there from Beirut.